Hi, Kirsty Melville here, and I'm so excited to bring you this episode of Earshot. It truly is a treat. The story of a 1940s jazz musician performed by his uber-talented grandson as a live radio cabaret show. A couple of weeks ago, Joel Carnegie told the story of his grandfather in the town where he was born and lived most of his life, at the Geelong Performing Arts Centre in front of a live audience. It's a tale of music and memory. Here's Stardust, the Colbrain story.
Psst. Hey, you.
Yeah, you.
You're listening to radio from the mid-1950s. This is 3GL, Geelong's first radio station. And here's your host, Ken Bell.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The melody you're listening to ushers in the Colbrain Trio with Joe Evans as vocalist.
And the program's called Riding on a Rainbow, a weekly live-to-air show
featuring Arthur Flanagan, pianist, Graham Greenhalgh, bass, Carl Anderson, guitar, and Colbrain on his trumpet.
That's my pa. He was also a great singer. Hey, pa.
How do you do? Hello.
It's really nice to hear from you, Pa.
You're a nice little fellow, I know by your voice, but you're always so far away.
Colbrain died in 1988. I never knew him. But as one of Geelong's most well-regarded musicians of his time, Cole left a legacy in the music he played, the students he taught, and in me. So who was Colbrain? Before he died, Cole stored all of his music, including compositions, diaries and instruments, into a large wooden dresser in the garage of his house in East Geelong.
Relics of the very early days of Australia,
he said. The cupboard was locked, and the key disappeared, and it was never to be opened again. Whether you realise it or not, we all scatter clues about our lives on a daily basis. Letters, tweets, shopping lists, emails. But when faced with an imminent departure from this life, how would you want to be remembered? This is the question that I'm presented with as I stare at that cupboard. What did Colbrain want us to know about his life by the things he left behind? To find out, we've got to go back to the beginning and to find those who remember him, starting with my mum, Colbrain's daughter, Colleen.
He was born in 1914 on the 2nd of October. His father was a policeman. He was the oldest of four children. He had two sisters and a brother.
But sadly, the family unit wasn't going to last long. His mother died suddenly, and his father just couldn't look after him. Cole ended up at the St. Augustine's Orphanage in Geelong. Upon arrival, he saw the school band boys being marched up and down, led by the formidable Australian musician Percy Jones. Being in the band sounded like a great opportunity to Cole because, well,
there were certain jobs they didn't have to do like the others, because they had band practice. So perhaps they didn't have to scrub out the toilets or do something like that.
But there came a test.
He was told as a seven-year-old, if you want to learn to play, you'll have to play a piece of music on a piece of hose pipe. So Dad went off and learned how to play a piece of hose pipe, and he played Bye Bye Blackbird. And not only just played it straight, it was the jazzed up version. And of course, Percy Jones took him on.
Cole spent 7 years at this orphanage, taking part in a band which was not only to become an A-grade band, but also Australasian champions. The orphanage were kind enough to give them extra food for their efforts.
In music circles, Dr. Percy Jones was pretty big. He was his first teacher. And I think his only teacher. After that, Dad just taught himself. He just practiced and practiced and practiced.
Cole passed his merit certificate at age 14.
He felt he got a reasonable level of education. However, he wasn't able to go on because his father took him out of the orphanage.
And they went back to Castlemaine together.
He'd spent 7 years at this orphanage waiting to go and make a home with his father and two sisters and younger brother. And as they walked in the front door, my father's dad said, "Oh, by the way, son, you've got a new mother." So at the age of 14, Dad turned round and walked out the door and didn't ever go back.
Here's a number made popular by Glenn Miller. This is essentially a big band tune, but as it's been specially requested by Kathleen Cook of St. George's Road, Norlane, here's the trio's own humble version of it, A String of Pearls.
In the 1920s and 30s, jazz was spreading across the dance halls and other venues around the country. Musicians like Glenn Miller, Benny Goodman, Tommy Dorsey, Hoagy Carmichael and Bing Crosby were all hitting their stride. Their influence was making its way over to Australia and into the mind and fingers of the impressionable and impressive young trumpet and cornet player, Cole Brain.
Glenn Miller, amongst many of those days, had a huge impact, I'm sure, not just on him, but on all of the musos of the day.
Cole's first gig at age 15 was playing in bands for silent movies in Geelong, and this would soon turn into regular gigs, as this entry in the Oxford Companion to Australian Jazz recalls.
From the 1920s, Geelong enjoyed the services of several dance bands, including the Moonlight Serenades, led during 1930-31 by teenage trumpeter Colin Brain, who continued leading bands throughout the 40s.
That's Des Cam, Cole Brain's hairdresser, and a musician responsible for collating information for this historic guide to the Australian jazz scene. But Cole Brain's life would change forever. One night, when he met a woman at a gig, meet Thelma Ricus.
We used to go out every Saturday night to get mum's vegetables. And this night we happened to be passing the drill hall.
The tunes were fresh. She could hear the dancers having loads of fun. So she decided to go in. But there was just one small problem.
I had this big cabbage to carry. So I went to this fella at the ticket box and said, "Look, would you hold this cabbage while I go and have a dance?" And he said, "Yes, I'll mind it for you." So he mind the cabbage. And I went in. And who was the fella that took the money so I could go in? Colin.
And there you have it. The beginnings of a lifelong relationship. For my nana, Thelma Ricus, and my pa, Cole Brain. All starting, I guess, with a cabbage.
And now, after dealing in such expensive gifts, we turn our attention to a more romantic setting. And for you, Sally, here's your request for Blue Moon.
Cole and Thelma married in Geelong at St Mary's Church in 1935. But on their wedding night, Cole said to Thelma,
"Well, you go to bed early, have a rest, because I'm going out." I said, "Where are you going?" He said, I've got to play in the band." I said, "Oh, no." So off he went and played in the dance band.
Cole's work ethic and dedication to provide for his young family meant that he had to juggle his blossoming playing career, playing up to 5 nights a week, with whatever paid manual labour jobs he could find. A daughter was born, my Aunt Sally. Blue Moon, it's one of her favourite tunes. But by that stage, war was in the air.
It is my melancholy duty to inform you, officially, that in consequence of a persistence by Germany in her invasion of Poland, Great Britain has declared war upon her, and that as a result, Australia is also at war.
And as the war came closer, he got a job as a signalman. It was considered a protected occupation.
And Cole was sent down to Port Fairy, a now rather charming seaside tourist town on the southwest coast of Victoria. But at the time, it was at the end of the train line. Upon arrival, Cole started teaching music to the local Port Fairy boys. Alec Chapman and Eric Bishop remember him well.
I was tutored by Colin when I was 10. Used to go down to where he lived, 4 shillings a time for an hour's tutor.
Oh, he was a great fella. He was a real genuine gentleman.
Shortly after that, Cole was appointed as bandmaster of the Port Fairy Brass Band. John Taff vividly remembers the times when the band would perform out on the streets of Port Fairy.
Everyone dropped tools, no matter what it was. It was a real big thing.
Following one particular band performance, the local newspaper, the Port Fairy Gazette, also complimented
the lads in the band and their bandmaster, Mr. Seabrain, for their fine showing. Port Fairy had a good band, and it was one of which its citizens should feel justly proud. A town without a band was a town without a soul.
But aside from band outings and musical competitions, it must have been a cold and dark place for Cole and his family, especially in winter.
Mum felt totally alienated being down here. The only link was the railway line, the link back to civilization, she used to say.
The social and religious hierarchy of the town was, at times, rather tricky to deal with. You were either born in one of two camps, Catholic or Protestant. Oh, being born in Port Fairy also brought credibility. Now, being neither particularly religious or a true blue Port Fairy local, Cole endured several run-ins with the local religious establishment. As local boy, Cole Hastings recalls.
Down at Port Fairy, when the nun came and suggested to him that they should add another member to the family, he suggested to the nun that when she had her next child, he would have his.
Yeah, well, that would have gone down like a lead balloon.
But he didn't really knock it, but he just, he had no opinion on it. And by the way, it was very hard to succeed in the railways years ago if you didn't have a strong religious conviction.
Cole took the opportunity of the quiet fishing village to work on his own playing technique, a watershed moment in his musical career that saw a dramatic improvement to his embouchure and tone. But by that stage, the war had ended, and it was time for Cole and his family to return to the Big Smoke. Back living in Geelong, Cole returned to the railways, with his swing band career really taking off.
One of the more enduring swing bands was the Casino Band led by Colin Brain. Through most of the 40s and playing a 4-year residency at the Hall of Honour in Yarra Street.
Oh, that's Des Cam, reading again from the Oxford Companion to Australian Jazz.
You have to remember that when Cole was doing it in the 30s and 40s, it wasn't trad jazz. It was swing dance music. And what made it jazz was they soloed. So that was the difference. So Cole was doing that. I know, he talked to me about it.
Probably when Des was cutting Cole's hair as his hairdresser.
Just had wiry, steel grey hair, had a short back and sides, high up the side, wore glasses, smoked a pipe. He would just call him coming from work, from the railways. He never changed much.
But Cole got notice of an opportunity that would take his life in a very different direction.
There was a turning point with my parents when Dad was offered a gig to go to Sydney playing in a club known at the time as the Trocadero Club, a well-regarded nightclub playing swing music, big band music.
Tonight, the boys open on an unusually hot note with That's Old Pepper.
The Trocadero Club was the hit place to be. Affectionately known as the Troc, on Friday and Saturday nights, this was Sydney's Dance Central. Situated in the heart of Sydney's CBD, TV and radio personalities mixed with the grand dames of Sydney society. Actors and, well, even the occasional royal was known to hit the dance floor. This was going to be Cole's big break.
Here it was, he had the opportunity to really make something of his music. and go further than he probably ever dreamed of, and playing with the best Australian trumpeters and band members of the time.
You know, it was full-time, you know, big money in those days compared to where he's working the railways.
That's Noel Flakemore, one of Coltrane's favourite trumpet students.
He was a very top corner player in his day.
And the offer to play at the Troc was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Cole. He'd worked so hard on his playing technique, he was ready for anything.
Come from an orphanage, and I think he had a hard early life, and he appreciated what he had, but he worked for everything he had.
I don't think the decision would have been an easy one.
Because on the one hand, he now had a young family to look after, but on the other, the bright lights and promises of Sydney were beckoning. However, there was just one question he couldn't escape from. If he took the gig, would he be forcing his family into instability like he had endured as a kid? The decision was made. He turned his back on the offer. For a man who once described music as his first love, he came to the realisation there was more to life than making music.
In the end, it was probably for the better because, you know, music can be fickle.
Would have been in some ways disappointing.
But once he made the decision, that was it. He would have dropped it. There was no looking back. It was only going forward.
And had he made a different decision, maybe I wouldn't be here. Cole Hastings met Cole Brain again in Geelong when they were both working on the railways.
Cole had control of, I think it would have been 40 or 50 over in the good sheds. And they were of all nationalities and all types, and Cole honestly treated them all the same.
Cole Brain ended up being promoted from assistant foreman to foreman, being in charge of the entire Goodsheds complex, which put through millions of dollars of business a year.
He did not see Australia as an isolated island. I think he really thought we were part of the world.
And this philosophy would extend to his playing career. Cole was known for sending away for music, which was then shipped from all over the world, direct to Cole's letterbox, at number 11, Lomond Terrace, East Geelong. Cole and his swing band would be beneficiaries of these international musical influences and would travel all around Victoria to play. But it wasn't all smooth sailing. One night, the band went to play in the homestead of a prominent farming family. Upon arrival, promptly being told by the owner,
"Tradesman's entrance. That's the way you go in."
So Cole thought at the time,
"That will keep."
So the band set up and started to play, with the guests loving the tunes whilst enjoying a good spread of country hospitality. Cole asked the owner,
"Is there some supper for the band? Where's the band supper?" And the owner of the property said, "Oh, no, we haven't got anything for you." So Dad called over one of the band members and said, "Here's some money. Go and buy some fish and chips. We'll eat them in the middle of the ballroom." And with that, the owner of the property turned around and fairly quickly found the band. Quite a beautiful spread.
All right, so after that, the night continued without incident. And a few hours later, Cole and his band were on to their final tune for the evening.
And the property owner said, no, we want you to keep playing. Everyone's enjoying it so much. Just name your price." And so Dad, at this point in time, remembered about the tradesman's entrance and about the fact that he needed to ask for supper. And he named an impossibly high figure.
And then multiplied it by each member of the band.
Dad's comment was, "When he opened his wallet, a moss trooper couldn't have jumped over it." And here's Dad getting a meagre wage at the railways to be paid this astronomical figure. I think they played for, another 2 or 3 hours after that, but quite happily played, I would have assumed too. It was worthwhile going in the end.
In 1951, Cole was offered a new gig, the position of bandmaster of the Geelong West City Brass Band. A familiar face of the band, he temporarily held the position for a couple of years before officially returning to the podium in 1956. Weekly band rehearsals leading up to concerts and competitions would run like clockwork. But not without controversy.
I'm sure he ruffled a lot of feathers. He probably ruffled feathers when he was playing in brass bands more than he would have done during the swing band era.
I think he was a pretty hard taskmaster. He wouldn't settle for anything less than what it should be until he got the message across.
During his 24-year tenure with the Geelong West City Brass Band, Cole took the band to new heights, performing around Victoria as well as for state and national competitions.
Music was his outlet. That's the way he expressed himself. He wanted to see people get their full potential.
During his time with the band, a new set of instruments was purchased, and the building of a purpose-built band facility located in the heart of Geelong West firmly established the band for all time. Yet the pivotal moment for Cole and the band came at the 1974 Tanunda National Brass Band competitions.
He was quite anxious about it because he wanted the band to perform well, and he had chosen some challenging pieces. He'd chosen, you know, Elephant Walk and Moon River, and they weren't pieces that brass bands normally play. Brass bands were always seen in terms of marches and hymns, and that was about it.
But Cole wanted to do something different.
So they went down the street playing the march, Victorian Rifles, and it was almost Dad's signature march, and he maintained it wasn't difficult to play, but it was a stirring piece and it highlighted the best parts of the band. This was Dad's piece.
Although Cole was worried.
He was working full-time as well, and I think the stress of the competition and getting everyone ready and up to speed certainly impacted on his health. But in spite of that, I think everyone just pulled together and they virtually scooped the pool.
There were big celebrations after the win. Cole's secret weapon, the Victorian Rifles, had paid off. But the next concert was to be his last.
He played the same program that they played at Tanunda. And at the end of the program, out in the open at the Australia Day concert, he announced to the band that he was finishing. He wanted to finish on top and bow out gracefully, and he didn't ever go back. He didn't ever go back to conducting the band again. After that time, he certainly did a little bit more teaching in schools, and he always had an incredible interest in music. But January 1975 was the last time he conducted a brass band.
So maybe we should open the cupboard because it's been sitting here for such a long period of time.
And in a sense, we're sort of custodians of that little slice of family musical history. It was his domain, his thing. We weren't permitted to unlock it or look at it, but he would freely talk about it's in the shed. That music's in the shed. And I really like the way it's never been painted, it's never been touched. It's pretty well in original condition.
Well, why don't we see if we can find this key and open it up.
Okay, let's go.
All right.
That's it. You've got to push it in right to there. Here we go. Ah, the smell's still the same. You know, some things don't change, do they?
Wow, yeah. So there's if you look kind of in here, there's just boxes of paper and scores. And what's this folder here?
It's in pretty good nick. It's got writing at the front. Schubert's Unfinished Symphony. This was one of his favourite pieces. He completely transcribed the first movement of Schubert's symphony for brass bands, and he handwrote all of the parts. I remember him playing it, and it was quite incredible. It certainly left a lasting impression on me.
What's in the bag?
Some mutes.
And what's this?
I think it's Dad's original trumpet.
And finally tonight, here's a special request from Colin of East Geelong. It's a performance of Stardust featuring Joel Carnicky and the Geelong West Brass Band.
And now the purple dusk of twilight time steals across the meadows of my heart. High up in the sky, those little stars climb, always reminding me that we're apart. You wander down the lane and far away, leaving me a song that will not die. Love is now the stardust of yesterday, the music of the years gone by.
So, what can you learn about someone by the things they leave behind? For me, this cupboard is like a time capsule of treasured memories, of all the things this man felt were important to him and to future generations. Oh, and by the way, I came across the brass band that Cole lovingly developed in Port Fairy, which is still in existence, just in the form of a small local concert band. And as for the Geelong West Brass Band, ladies and gentlemen, I'd love to acknowledge the band with me on stage, a six-piece ensemble from the band with their now musical director, Mr. Jeff Steele. So perhaps the universe has decided to repeat itself, with Cole and I sharing one very special connection, the opportunity to explore life through music, radio, and performance. And for that, I'm eternally grateful.
Though I dream in vain, in my heart it will remain. My stardust melody, the memory of your love.
So until we meet again, same time, same place, this is Ken Bell saying goodnight till next time, when once again we'll go riding on a rainbow.
Thanks, Ken. And before I go, I just wanted to leave you with this, a favourite saying of the late Cole Brain. No matter how life unfolds, just don't look back. Don't regret. Just keep moving forward. Change the things you can change, and the rest, just leave. And with that, it's time for me to take my leave. Thank you for listening.
And that was Joel Carnegie with the story of his grandfather, Col Brain. And Joel wrote and produced the program. The director of the stage show was Tom Molyneux. The sound engineers were Tim Simons and Richard Gervin. And the executive producer was Claudia Taranto. And a big thank you to the Geelong After Dark Festival. Now, here's the bit where I hit you up for a bit of love. If you like what you're hearing on Earshot, tell your friends about us, rate us on whichever app store you use, and hey, why not even tell us? You can do that on our website or on our very informative Facebook page. Coming up in the next episode of Earshot, Geraldine Doogue takes us to Ireland for the celebrations of the centenary of the Easter Rising. Geraldine's been over there finding out all about her own family's place in that story. I'm Kirsty Melville, and I'll catch you then. See ya.